Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Martin, and I'm happy to have you with me today as I am joined by a repeat guest, though in a completely different format and a completely different topic. Today, I've got Helgi Freyr-Thomasson, who formerly was on the podcast in conjunction with Nyx in relation to her methodology of serving 5-MeO-DMT, and he was one of her clients. But this time I've got Helgi back on as a musician. His musician name is Hewki, that's H-E-W-K-I-I, and he will explain where that comes from in the interview. But Helgi's got a new album that is coming out in December, and it's Ecstasy Juice. Or perhaps Ecstasy Juice from God. I'm not certain of the full title. So it's either one of those. Again, we discuss it in the conversation here. But today we're going to be talking about music and talking about the relationship between altered states and music and also sampling tracks off of the new album. And it's going to be a lot of fun. So looking forward to sharing that with you and also just all my cards on the table that Helgi has invited me to collaborate on some of the songs on this album. So there's a little bit of me in there too, which was a lot of fun for me to receive these tracks from Helgi and just do some stuff for him. Anyway, let's get a few announcements out of the way before we get into this lovely conversation with Helgi, also known as Hewki. First off, we'd like to thank Josh as signing up as a new patron over at my Patreon page over this past week. Thank you very much for your support. And if you would like to help support me and the podcast over there at Patreon, it's patreon.com/MartinWBall, everything from $1 a month up to $100 a month, with increasing access and benefits as you go up the tiers. And as usual, thanks to James, who makes a monthly contribution via PayPal in support of the podcast. Thank you very much. James, if you would like to support the podcast either via PayPal or Patreon, stop by my personal webpage, martinball.net, and there's a link to Patreon and PayPal at the top right of the page. And of course, this is listener-supported, so it's always appreciated when somebody reaches out with a little bit of support in appreciation for what I'm doing here on the podcast. Also, I have to make a correction. I've been mentioning Magda's upcoming 5-MeO-DMT retreat in Mexico that is coming up on, let me look at the notes here, January 12th through 16th, 2024. And I've mistakenly said that it was focused on low dose and meditation. Yes, that is part of the retreat, but Magda has corrected me and said, oh, we're also doing full release doses. I did not read the information that she sent me closely enough, so I apologize for that. But yeah, going all the way from the bottom to the top and beyond with Magda for that event. If you are interested, I think she still has a few spaces left. You should email her directly at omnirme@gmail.com. That's omnirme@gmail.com. And my apologies for misleading anyone about what's going to be happening at that retreat. Okay? So, cool. That's out of the way. Of course, next week we will have the next selection from the audiobook of Facilitating 5-MeO-DMT. And I've got more interviews already waiting in the wings to come out here in the podcast. And I'm busy trying to collect some more because I'm going to be doing some travels in December. Also, just coming up in a couple weeks. Right before my birthday, going to be traveling for Thanksgiving and just trying to get some interviews banked away so that I've got plenty of material for while I'm out traveling around and photographing birds, because, you know, that's what I like to do when I'm out and about. So that's all we've got for now. And let's go ahead and let's get into this conversation with Helgi. Again, his artist name is Hewki, H-E-W-K-I-I. I'm going to put a link in the notes to the podcast that will get you to the master page that links to where you can find his music online. This new album, Ecstasy Juice from God, again, it might just be Ecstasy Juice, is coming out in December. And Helgi also is generously offering that if you would like to contact him on Facebook under Helgi Freyr-Thomasson, that he will give you a link to download a pre-release version of the album. So that's very cool. Thank you very much, Helgi. And it's H-E-L-G-I Thomason. Find him on Facebook. All right, let's go ahead into this conversation. And I'm going to listen to some tunes and have a thumping good time here. All right. Well, I'm really excited to welcome back onto the Entheogenic Evolution podcast today, Helgi Freyr. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Close enough.
Oh, well, then you give it to me, yeah.
Helgi Freyr.
Helgi Freyr. Yeah, working on my Scandinavian accent.
Yeah.
You were on the podcast once before when we did kind of a group conversation with Nyx.
That's right. Yeah, I came on like last minute as an extra guest because I had been a client working with her before.
Yeah. Yeah. And you guys were housemates for a bit.
Yes. Yeah. We were housemates and Fabio mates.
Yeah. Yeah. So the longtime listening audience, or at least people who have been listening regularly for the past few years, might remember you. But today, we're here to talk about music. And we'll probably be talking about some entheogens and psychedelics as well, I might imagine.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah, but we're talking about music today. So let's just jump right in. And what you can tell us, what is the music that we are going to be talking about today, Helgi?
Well, I'm going to be releasing a new album quite soon. It's probably going to come out, I would guess, 2 or 3 months from now, hopefully more around 2. So I don't know when this podcast comes out, but
right. So we're recording
soon enough. It's right around the corner.
Yeah, we are October 26th today that we're actually recording this. Yeah.
Yeah. It's my upcoming album, Ecstasy Juice from God.
Such a fun title. Well, let me just ask you this to start. Why is it that you're projecting that it's going to be released 2 or 3 months from now? Why not right now? What's the thinking behind that?
Well, it's right now. I mean, the album is complete on my part, but it's in the mastering process.
Mm.
So it goes to an audio engineer and they're basically making it a bit louder and more full. And kind of making it a more streamlined listening experience. But that's a whole process, and it's a bit gratuitous on my part. I have to listen to everything and make sure that it's being done well. So yeah, I don't know honestly when it's going to be done. So
yeah, well, I guess
that's a promise too soon. Right. I would rather promise too late than too soon.
Right. Well, I guess that's the life, and that's the difference between a professional musician and somebody who just sits at his computer and makes a song. And because, like, when I work on stuff, it's like, oh, I want to put this out in case anybody wants to listen to it. And it's not like I have a huge listening audience or anything, but I'm always eager, like, oh yeah, I completed this song or I just finished this album. I want to put it out. But I've never gone to a mastering process, or I do that myself. Yeah. I'm not the best at it, definitely not professional at it, but a different life as a professional.
I almost envy that because there is an aspect to doing it as professionally as you can that is a bit gratuitous and kind of monotonous of listening to everything over and over again and getting the whole frequency balance right and mixing and mastering. It's not all fun, the whole package, but it's extremely rewarding to put something out there that you feel really happy about.
Yeah, that you feel is really polished.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, having listened to the entire album several times now, and as I mentioned before we started recording, that I was listening to it this morning and I was going about my morning routine, I would just describe the entire album as just very crisp. It's very bright. It has just some really beautiful melodic aspects to it. It has lots of very powerful swells and rises and falls. And then especially listening to the last song, The Black Hole of Eternal Bliss, there's, you know, that's your 14-minute long track. And there's like parts of that where I'm thinking like, okay, this is the part of the mushroom journey where you're like, whoa, shit just got weird. You know, like when those really
and
quick
funny transitions. Story about.
Yeah. Okay.
A funny story about that track is that I was in the middle of working on that track when I did Fabimeo with Nyx. Mm-hmm. So there is a section in the track that comes right out of those experiences. Just a fun little.
Well, I can feel that when you listen to it, that because it goes through so many different transitions, and it's like, I didn't count, but it seems like it's at least maybe five different songs kind of all smashed into one. It holds together as a cohesive piece, but it definitely dips into like, whoa, we just shifted gears right here. This is something totally different. And then it kind of comes back out. And I'm just really impressed. I'm really impressed with the whole album. I've really enjoyed listening to it. So I just want to read off the titles of the tracks. And are these titles solid, or might they change in the next 2 months?
They're solid.
Okay. Well, why don't you read them off? Would you like to, or you want me to do it?
I can do that.
Okay. Well, tell us the titles and then maybe what they're referencing.
So just to go through each one and... I mean, they don't all have... I mean, sometimes they just reference a certain feeling that I have or that arose out of the song. It's not always super specific. And I don't always write music in a way that I'm trying to convey a specific idea or a feeling. It usually just snowballs. It starts with a little thing and it just snowballs out from that. And I have no idea what it's going to be. And then sometimes just the title comes out of just whatever feeling the song inspires in me. But yeah, the first track is the title track, Ecstasy Juice from God. And it's a funny title. That was also just something that came out of a feeling from the music. It's very ecstatic and it's very juicy.
Yeah.
And it has this epicness to it. So that was the name that came, Ecstasy Juice from God.
Yeah, I love that one. And I would definitely agree that there's a strong sense of this is an epic track. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And the second track, one just escapes me. The Tryptamine Molecular Express. Interesting. Yeah, I think I heard you use that phrase at some point. And,
yeah.
It just stuck with me because I was like, I'm always with my ears open for cool song titles. And that phrase stuck with me, like, oh, that could be really cool for a title. And I felt like it was appropriate for this track.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I thought that seemed familiar, that from the track that I did with my wife, Down the Wormhole, where I have the little spoken bit, like, welcome to the Tryptamine Molecular Express. Yeah. So thank you for that reference. I enjoyed that. I loved it when I saw the title. I was like, oh, cool. He used that.
Yeah. I mean, should we go into detail about each one or do you want me just to run through the titles?
Let's do the titles right now. Then we're going to go back and we'll get some details.
Yeah. So then the next one is called Love Like Sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes... there's a little voice spoken bit in there from there's this old guy on YouTube called John Butler. He's kind of a spiritual teacher, or he has a lot of this kind of old man wisdom. And he had this video called Love Like Sunshine. And I put that in there. So the title came from there. And it's also very bright and summery.
Yeah.
Which is ironic because it's going to be coming out in the winter, but you can have some winter sunshine, I guess.
Yeah, well, you need that in Iceland, I think, right?
Yeah.
All right.
And the next one is Heart Mind. And I don't know exactly where that... I think I heard Ram Dass use that, or Alan Watts use that phrase at some point, and I thought it was kind of descriptive of the song because it's probably the most kind of melancholic or heartfelt song on the album. It's So yeah, I don't have much to say about that title.
And also the shortest track on the album.
Yeah, it's the shortest track. It's short and sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
It says what it has to say.
Nice.
Yeah, and the fifth one is "Song of the Universe," and I mean that title just comes from the lyrics. It's the only song I've ever put out that has vocals, like sung vocals on it. I usually do instrumentals, and it's funny because I went to an ayahuasca ceremony a few years back, and I heard somebody sing this song, and this song stuck with me. Like, it was probably the only song that I kind of remembered, and I went online to see, like, does this song exist? And there was just like this tiny little recording of somebody singing the song without a background. And so I had the idea to turn that into like a full track and get a vocalist, my friend Vala, to come and sing on that one.
Nice. So you gave her the lyrics that came from that ayahuasca song?
Yeah, or I showed her the little recording that I found online of this woman singing the song.
Nice. Yeah. So that was a friend of yours?
Yeah. Yes, he's a friend. And the next one is Shiva's Shuffle, which is funny because, I mean, a lot of the songs have a little bit of a spiritual theme to them. And this is the only track on the album which has kind of a swing to it. It has a shuffle to it. I don't know if there are musicians in the audience. I don't know how to describe shuffle. It's a little bit more like tick tack tick tack
tick tack tick tack. Yeah, yeah.
It's a little more. It swings a little more.
So, yeah, it's got that syncopation to it. Yeah.
Right. So yeah, that's Shiva's Shuffle, and the last one is The Black Hole of Eternal Bliss. And as I said, I was working on that a lot when I was working with Nyx. And she was holding a gathering, or like a mini meditation retreat in our home. And she called the event The Black Hole of Eternal Bliss. And as soon as she told me, I thought to myself in my head, like, okay, yeah, that's the name.
Yeah, yeah, that's the name of a track right there.
Yeah, and it's also it's the last track on the album, so it's kind of everything leading up to that point, you know.
So, Helge, I want to get back into talking about all the individual tracks, but before we do that, what I would like to do is just kind of open it up to your process as a musician and really more specifically becoming a musician. That when in your life did you decide that you wanted to do music? And then, of course, you know, we're interested in how perhaps your psychedelic experiences have played into your construction and creation of music. But let's just start there with, you know, when did you get into music? When did you have that spark of, I'm going to be a musician? And also, I just want to tell the audience that, you know, we're talking about a series of electronic tracks today on this album, but you've also recently put out just some amazing freestyle guitar stuff that I didn't even know you played guitar, that I thought of you as an electronic musician, and then it just totally blown away by your guitar skills. So where did it all begin, Helge?
Well, it began almost as far back as I can remember, but there was like one pivotal moment. I think it must have been something like 5 or 6 years old, and I was like just, you know, scrolling through my parents' CDs. This was back in the day when they had CDs.
Yeah.
And and I was just looking at them, and there was like this one that had skulls on it. I was like, that's my CD. And it was Appetite for Destruction from Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
And like I put it on and it was just like it spoke to like this fire within me of like, you know, it just hit that spot for me. And like ever since that point, like I picked up the guitar, I got into rock music, got into rock and metal. And I was really heavily in that world for a while of like guitar and heavy music. And then I got into like more progressive metal. I got a lot into Dream Theater and Symphony X and bands that are. Are you familiar with the term progressive or prog?
A little bit. I don't think it's a style of music I ever personally got into. So how would you describe that?
I mean, it just emphasizes kind of breaking the rules a bit. You know, mm-hmm. having more complex song structures, longer songs, longer guitar solos, breaking a little bit of the boundaries of what a song should be.
Yeah.
And I was really heavily invested in that world for a while. And I always kind of looked down on electronic music. I always kind of thought in my head, like, oh, they're not playing real instruments. It's just some guy yeah. is pushing a button and then he's dancing. This can be the perception of people that play instruments of electronic musicians.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And then I just had this one moment when, must have been in 2010 or 11. This was when the dubstep scene was really kind of taking off into the mainstream, and there was somebody at school who like put on a dubstep track, and like, you know, I was pretending, oh, like, oh, it's electronic music, it's pop, like this.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a real rocker. I'm not. I don't. But inside, I was, damn, this is like some heavy stuff. Like, you know, it spoke to me also. So like, I became curious to explore. Like, well, how do I make dubstep? Like, what is the process of doing this? Like. And then I slowly learned, like, oh, okay, so this is a whole art unto itself. And it is, like, it's not just pressing a button. It is yeah. a real, you have to put all the elements in. You have to mix them together. Like, this is a bit more like painting a painting. It's less expressive than playing instruments, but it's almost more kind of detail-oriented, the process yeah. of, like, programming everything and putting everything in. And so, and yet I really wanted to see if I could bridge this world of like the progressive rock and metal music I was listening to and seeing if I could kind of mix those two worlds of yeah electronic dance music, which is kind of the opposite. It's much more simple, it's much more 4x4 simple melodic structures, and you know, everything is more simplified, and then you have this really complex music on the other hand. And yeah, my dream was always to kind of see if I can merge these two.
Yeah.
And I think like on the Black Hole of Eternal Bliss, that was kind of the first time I truly feel like I've accomplished really, you know, mixing those two together.
Yeah. Well, that makes so much sense to me now that you've described this. And this is news for me. I didn't know that you were into that style of music previously, but I can definitely see how that sense of progressive rock music is shaping, particularly, as you say, the Black Hole of Eternal Bliss, but also just the whole album, that there's so many, each song has its own little sections, and it's not simplistic. And I think that is, especially just a lot of the dance hall music is very repetitive. It might only just have like one chord and things just kind of right. go through different sounds and progressions, and the beats are relatively simple, right. but there's a lot of complexity in this.
Yeah. I mean, there is a lot of value in repetitiveness, because like dance music in general is kind of designed to entrance people or yeah. to hypnotize people. And when you have an element that's kind of repeating over and over again, it has this effect of almost hypnotizing you. And so, yeah, I've been kind of obsessed with like, how can I maintain that hypnotic element and also not make it boring? Because I grew up with electronic music, not in the dance sense. I didn't go to clubs much, or didn't go out dancing much with people. I listened to it with headphones. And so I guess I'm kind of creating dance music for the listening experience. Also, it works for dancing. It's really good on the dance floor. But I'm first and foremost, I'm trying to create a, you know, good music.
Yeah.
It's a good listening experience.
Yeah. And I think also perhaps that progressive rock influence comes through with, again, a lot of dance music, a lot of electronic music has like hooks and things like that. But often there's not a lot of melody that gets used in a lot of electronic music. You know, you get those repetitive bits that goes through, you know, phasers and warps and things like that. But that's one of the things that I really enjoy about this album is that there's so many beautiful melodies that come in. And you have your little hooks too, you know, short melodic expressions, but also just these really soaring, beautiful melodies that come in. And that's something that has always, you know, excited me musically. I like the beautiful melody.
Yeah, it has to be musical for me, and it's I want it to be lyrical almost.
Yeah,
like I create a lot of instrumental music, and I think for me my favorite music is usually instrumental because it doesn't dictate to me what it's supposed to be.
Yeah,
it leaves it up to my imagination. But I like to have melodies that make it a little bit more lyrical, or there's a. And that comes also from me being a lead guitar player.
Yeah.
So I know a little bit more about how to, you know, I played with them, but I mostly played lead and solo. So I learned a bit how to, you know, make lines that are lyrical, I guess.
Yeah. Well, your skill there is just exceptional. Again, those videos you were putting out on Facebook of you playing guitar, I was just like, holy shit. Like, Helgi can really play the guitar. I mean, as a guitarist, I mostly identify as like a rhythm guitarist personally. Like I've never been the big solo guy, but I was just like, damn, just look at his fingers going, just listen to that. That guy can really play. So I was definitely really impressed. And do you mind if I share a short story with you?
Yeah, sure.
So I just wanted to share with you kind of my conversion to electronic music that, you know, I grew up listening to a lot of British new wave alternative music. You know, so there's a lot of guitars and synthesizers. You know, The Cure, Depeche Mode, New Order. Those were some of my really big influences when I was younger. But then, as an adult, I really leaned heavily into like acoustic stuff. And so there was a time there as a musician where I was like strictly acoustic, like my kind of like you were saying, where I was like, I want to play every instrument. I don't ever want to push a button. I want to play every instrument and every sound I use. I want it to be something that I'm actually physically playing. And what changed that for me is I think it was my very first year at Burning Man where there was electronic like music everywhere. And I was walking around on the playa on mushrooms, and this crane that had been transformed into this luminous flower that could kind of open up and change colors, that I'm tripping on mushrooms, and this flower, this giant flower, drives across the playa like straight for me, and this flower comes down right in front of my face, and it's playing like this ambient electronic music. And I was just like, oh, okay, electronic music can be awesome. Then I actually went out and I bought a MIDI keyboard at that point, and that's when I started, you know, working more specifically with electronic music. So that was my conversion point.
that seems to be the conversion point for many people.
Yeah, Burning
because
Man.
Because I've heard this story before of not just Burning Man, like, you know, psychedelics and MDMA, you know. I've heard so many stories of people like, I never used to like electronic music. And then I heard it on MDMA or I went to a club and, you know, it changed. And yeah, of course, I think all these expressions are so valid. And I'm like, right now in the future, I'm hoping that I can mix the guitar more in with the electronics so I can have kind of the best of both worlds. Because it is true that it's not always too enjoyable for me to program music. For me, like, it is to a degree, but there is a really, can be a boring element to it, to, like, carefully programming everything. Like, especially if you're super detail-oriented like me. And I did that for such a long time that I just, like, 1 year ago, I think, I just, like, fuck it, I just want to go and do the exact opposite. So I started to do freestyle guitar music, which is just the complete opposite of polishing and all this stuff, of just sitting down, pressing record, and I just have the guitar. I have no idea what's going to happen, and it just takes me on a journey. And I really enjoy, I guess, both of these ends of the spectrum, but I'm curious to explore the intersection more and see if I can make also the production process a little bit more lively and less mechanical, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to whatever it is that you develop along those lines. I'm sure it'll be amazing. So you've already mentioned a few different places where psychedelics or psychedelic experience has informed the music on this particular album that we're talking about here. Again, this is Ecstasy Juice from God, still forthcoming as of our recording at this moment. But in terms of your own development as a musician, do you feel that psychedelics or altered states informed your sense of musicality and musical composition, or was it a separate area of your life, or what's your opinion on that for yourself?
It definitely completely changed the way I relate to music. And I guess it started with trying weed, you know, back in my teens.
Yeah.
And just really experiencing how it's possible to have a completely different experience of music. And also, I guess, the type of music that can come through, like when you start to enter those circles, that is also an influence, because I remember, like, you know, the first times I was trying psychedelics, I would put on, you know, in some Facebook groups, like, does somebody have recommendations for music?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of really, really good music that came through, you know, recommendations in that way. And I really remember kind of early on, you know, trying to listen to Spangl. Are you familiar with Spangl?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I heard them a little bit, you know. I was like, yeah, it's okay, it's good music. But then when I heard them in a different state, it was like a completely different track. And they have so many details and little things that you, like, gloss by in your kind of everyday you know, automatic state of mind. You can kind of skip over all those little things, but when you're in a different state, all those little decorations really pop out. And that was such a big thing for me to realize, like, oh, there's something really beautiful about creating these little hidden things that you don't normally hear, that if you listen closely enough, you hear, this was there all along.
Yeah.
So this has also been something I've been really trying to incorporate, of like creating a lot of little details that like 99% of listeners won't notice, but there's this 1%, you know, that hears, you know, notices all those little things, you know. Spangl early on, that was like, you know, going into the forest and smoking weed and listening to Spangl. It was like totally, and that was kind of the first time I realized that music had had the ability to be mystical, you know, not just to convey certain emotions or thoughts or whatever. It had the ability to truly communicate something ineffable and profound. And so I became a bit possessed by that idea of like creating a truly ecstatic, blissful experience through the music.
Wow. Well, I think it's such a great description for this album. The details, and I love this emphasis on how when working with psychedelics and listening to music, that I like to call them like auditory enhancement tools, right? That you get to listen to the music in a completely different way. And I love this description of like the, just the little details that pop out, the, and the little Easter eggs that might be hidden within a song, so that it's this experience that is created for that experience, right?
Right.
That, that the music really speaks to these altered states. And I also love this emphasis on the expression of the ineffable. And I think that that's something that gets really lost in lyrically centered music, right? Because there's a message, so I think a lot of people in the psychedelic space, they like to listen to like electronic music with Hindu chants or stuff like that, and everybody, oh, it's sacred. But I think that an instrumental track is way more sacred than that, because it's not identified within a particular tradition or belief system, and as you say, right, it allows the listener to have their own experience. It's not dictated to them that here's what the sacred message is, that you get to experience it yourself.
Exactly. And I definitely think there's like space for all of it. And I'm, you know, really excited to explore a little bit more music with vocals, and, you know, because I think all these different kinds of expressions are valuable, you know, but there was just something particularly unique and special to me about experiencing music in a way that did feel completely transcendent, or you know, whatever you might say, it's ineffable.
Yeah. Now, from the practical side of things, here's a question that, you know, the quote unquote drug users get asked is, do you like to get high and make music, or what's your relationship between altered states and the actual construction of the music itself? So, for example, I used to have a friend here in Ashland who made electronic music, and what he would do is he'd sit down and he'd work a little bit on his track, and then he kept his DMT pipe next to his computer, and then he'd smoke a little DMT and he'd play back part of the track and see if he liked it or not. And so that's how he constructed an album. But usually the DMT was the review. It wasn't like, I'm going to smoke DMT and now try and record, because that'd be kind of hard. Right. But he'd do that for constant reviewing throughout the track that he's creating. So I'm just putting that out there as an example. I used to smoke cannabis and make music. And I just don't do it that way anymore. It just isn't, but I used to do that every time. So I'd be high when I'm creating music. But how is that for you? What's your relationship?
I mean, I used to do that also. I mean, I don't smoke anymore. Like, cannabis, it stopped working for me. Or, like, it stopped having a positive effect for me. But, yeah, when I used to smoke, I used to do it all the time. I used to smoke and produce. And for me, it was generally really good for creativity. But when you get into a little bit more of the psychedelics, for me, it is, but it isn't, because it's hard to engage with the computer.
Yeah.
And the audio workstation just gets infinitely more complex. I mean, there was one track on the last Hugh Key album I released. The album is called The Cosmic Circus, and it's the final track. It's called Oozing Wisdom. And I worked on a lot of that track on acid, on LSD, and it did, you know, inspire a really wacky result, but it almost made me kind of really prone to obsession also, of like, it's such a stimulating process of creating music. It can be a little, I would have probably a much easier time like sitting down and playing a guitar.
Yeah.
Because you're not really engaging with this complex machinery and all these different moving parts. So I don't really do that so much anymore. But I used to really enjoy finishing a track and smoking a bit and, you know, listening to the complete thing and being really happy with the result. And, you know,
yeah.
I miss it a bit, but it's...
I was going to say that's more my process these days too, that I'll work on a song during the day, and then, you know, later that night, you know, I'll have some cannabis and sit back and listen to the track a few times, and that'll be my first enjoyment. And then for me also, when I finish an album and I feel like, okay, this collection of songs is now done, then I do like to trip, and then I'll listen to the album like 3-4 times, you know, over the course of several hours, and just really let myself enjoy it that way. And then sometimes see if there's anything that I want to change or anything that feels like, oh, that didn't quite work. Most of the time that doesn't happen at that point, but it has occasionally.
Yeah, it can give a little bit of a different perspective, because sometimes we're also too close to the creative process itself that it's we get a bit blinded.
Yeah. So, Helgi, let's go ahead and let's get back into the tracks, and this is the bit where maybe we'll share some little clips from the tracks and whatnot. And this will be my reveal that you asked me to participate in a few of these tracks. And so I've got some little vocal bits like starting off on Ecstasy Juice from God. And I got to say, like, working with you has just been so much fun, where you just send me a track and then you say, well, could you just say something about like Ecstasy Juice? I love it. It's just like so open-ended. So yeah, tell really me about funny. That. Like, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean that particular thing, I guess like our relationship started like a few years back when I was like using a lot of psychedelics and I was like really going out there, and I was like, I was fucking with you a bit on Facebook, you know, I was like, and I was not expecting you to respond when I was like, hey, can you like can you record a voice bit about discovering infinite licorice?
Yeah.
And then you sent it to me, and I was like, whoa, okay, I was not expecting him to to go along with this. So yeah, on this one, it was kind of a continuation of the same. It's kind of a sequel type continuation of Infinite Licorice. It's a track that we did, I don't know, 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
And this time it was about Ecstasy Juice. And it opens up the album in a very epic way to really, you know, convey the gravitas of the Ecstasy Juice.
What is this feeling of divine nectar, of the essence of infinity, of ambrosia and entheogenic elixir? Ecstasy Juice. Ecstasy Juice from God. I got to say, what I loved about your invitation to do something like that, I mean, aside from the fact that the song was all there, and yeah, when you originally contacted me about like Infinite Licorice, is that, you know, a lot of messages I get from people are very serious and very sincere about stuff. And I just kind of love, like, here's this guy in Iceland. He's like, could you just like say something about Infinite Licorice? I was like, what? Something absurd? That is just so much fun for me. Just the irreverent nature of it. I just loved it. So it was just an absolute pleasure for me to like just do something wacky. And you're like, yeah, can you just make a bunch of those weird noises that you do? And I was like, well, sure, I could do that.
Yeah.
So Ecstasy Juice from God, where did the song start? So you mentioned earlier that a lot of times songs start with just some element and then you build out around from there. So where did this one start?
Oh, I'm trying to remember. He wants to speak. Also, yeah. He has a lot to say.
Yeah.
I mean, they often start with the chord progression for me. Mm-hmm. And I think it must have just started with me playing with some of those arpeggiated lines you hear in the beginning. And just spiraled out from there. It's a very epic track. And it has, like, the chord progression itself is also really kind of... It's big, it's epic, it's a very energetic track. Like, you know, I've tested it a little bit with entheogens, and it's really good for movement and energy and moving energy and kind of embodying yourself in a very full way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if... Is he making too much noise?
No, it's totally fine. It's cute, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, just some soft baby sounds.
Beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is also one of the ones that you invited me to do a little flute on. Am I correct?
Yeah, it has some flute in the end. It's a little bit in the background. It's quite ambient. And but it fits really nicely, and it gives a little bit more of an ambient vibe. But it's a very energetic kind of trance track, but it also has a strong ambient element, and it has a section where are you familiar with the term of sidechain?
Sidechain, yes, but I
sidechain.
Yeah, I don't know what that means though. I see it in, you know, in the controls, but explain that to us. What is that?
So usually in electronic dance music, you have the volume kind of pumping in and out.
Mm-hmm. And like, right.
But usually a kick drum hits where everything dips. So it has this kind of pulsating effect.
Yeah.
And so I was playing a bit around with this idea of having a section with the sidechain, but no drums. So it has this kind of on and off.
Yeah.
Ambient thing that, you know, goes on. And it's, for me, it's very hypnotic and very beautiful. I mean, for some people, they say it's a bit of a headache. I can see that. But it's, for me, it's really hypnotic, and it is very ambient in a certain sense.
Yeah, so I can recall what it is that you're talking about there, where it's got, yeah, that pulsing rhythm, and it almost... cognitively, it almost feels like, well, is the rhythm on or is it off now? So it's a little bit disorienting, but it has that pulse to it. And then when everything right. sinks back in, that there's a real sense of satisfaction, like okay, now we're right. back in the groove. Yeah, so it builds that tension right. in an interesting way.
It's really good for movement, I would say. It's really good, I think, for, like, for biking or doing sports or, like, doing Qigong-type movements or, you know... For me, it's a very embodying track in a certain sense.
Yeah, I can see that. And I think it's a great kickoff to the album as well. And also, again, it's just a pleasure for me. I get some of the opening lines on the album. And so that's a lot of fun. You know, I've only done very minimal amounts of any collaborations with any musicians. And you're probably one of the ones I've done the most with through these little tiny elements.
Yeah. It's always nice to have a bit of flute in there. Like, sometimes if I'm feeling like, oh, there's a little something missing, I'm like, yeah, I can reach out for Martin for a little bit of flute. And it just, like, you know, adds a little bit of that, also the live instrument feel, that just a little bit more of that. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about the trip to Mean Molecular Express. What do you have to share about this particular thumper?
And it is a thumper. That is... like the perfect description. It's not too dissimilar from the first track. It's kind of the same tempo, and it's also kind of a trancey type track, but it's not as heavy for me. In the bottom end, it's a little more light, and it's very melodic, and it's really ecstatic. I was playing with some violin elements, and it's one of my favorites, and a lot of people echo the same, that it's one of their favorites from the album, because it's really, really catchy. It has a really catchy synth line, and it has a little bit of flute in there also. It has the repetitiveness also, similar to the first track, but it's another energetic one. But it's a little lighter, and it's a little bit more... for me, the word that comes up is green. I don't know why. Maybe that's because the color I had on the project was green, but it's a little bit more bright and light.
Yeah, it definitely has a very, very bright quality to it. And just the melodic hooks, the melody lines, it's just soaring. It's just up there. And there's also you use a lot of transpose a lot, I notice, with your melody lines, where the notes are bending from one to the next.
Right.
Yeah. So for
everybody who's doing that.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I was playing around quite a bit with pitch sliding in this track. And you also you touched upon a lot of the art of creating electronic music is to remove elements for them to come in again. And it has this really strong sense of satisfaction. And this track is playing a lot with kind of, it's not there and it's there, you know.
Yeah, and even some of the melody lines, you get a little fragment, and then a little later, there's a little bit, versus a continuous melody line. So you get these little bits and pieces that kind of come in and out. And I feel that there's a lot of that in this album, where things kind of fade out, and then something swoops back in. So again, sort of building that sense of tension, that sense of resolution, and ultimately producing that sense of satisfaction within it.
Exactly. Yeah, that is exactly. You said it better than me. It's a lot about tension control, tension and release.
Yeah. So with the name for this one, other than it sounds cool, is there a particular reference within the track itself, or just felt like, oh yeah, this one's the Tryptamine Molecular Express, because it is a bit more of a thumper of a song, much more of a movement.
It has a bit of that quality of taking off also. I connected it a bit with kind of a liftoff in a certain sense, you know, a train or a DMT or both, a Tryptamine Molecular Express.
Yeah. And so this isn't about a particular song, but I know you invited me to do some flute, but it sounds like someone else, I think it's on Black Hole of Eternal Bliss. It sounds like there's some saxophone or something in there. Is that you, or did you bring in any other musicians? And I know we have the woman singing on Song of the Universe, or is the rest of it you?
Yeah. I did go and record a saxophone player in a studio.
Okay.
And that was the first time I've done that, to go, because I was always a bedroom producer. Mm-hmm. You know, I would just create everything. And I found it to be really immensely satisfying to go to a place and to record something like that. And for me, a lot of electronic, it lacks a little bit of that element. Because it is more fun in a certain sense for me to go and meet people and to record something and to implement it into the music. Yeah. You're correct on that. I did go and record a saxophone player.
And was this someone who normally works in electronic music or works in different genres?
Well, it's just somebody recommended him to me. I mean, this is partly why that one took so incredibly long for me to finish. Like the Black Hole of Eternal Bliss, it took me 2 years to finish that one track. And that is partly because it takes very long to, find the right player and to find the studio and to find somebody who can help you with that.
Okay. Well, before we move on to the next song,
I'm trying to manage the movement of a baby right here while I'm on the podcast.
Yeah,
I think his mother is home really soon.
You're doing a great job, Helgi.
I was emergency babysitting.
Yeah. Is there a section of Tryptamine Molecular Express you'd like us to sample here on the podcast?
Well, I think it's good to, you know, where the violin comes in, or like the orchestral intro stops and there's violins that come in, and then, you know, the kick drum and the bass. I think it makes sense just to go from that violin and into the track with the rhythm.
So okay, great. Had a little bit of the Tryptamine Molecular Express there, and now let's move on to Love Like Sunshine. So where did this one start, if you can recall?
I think I was playing around a little bit with organ sounds and creating pulsating chords with the sidechain. Mm-hmm. And and yeah, the sound was a bit inspired by Deadmau5. Are you familiar with Deadmau5?
I know the name. I'm not familiar with their music, though.
Okay. Yeah, he does house music, progressive. I studied that for a while. So this is kind of me reaching back to one of the first styles I learned as a music producer. And I was playing around a little bit with distorted organs and synths to create, for me, really kind of satisfying distorted pulsating chords and some melodic elements. It usually starts with melodic elements and chord progressions.
To Heart Mind, the shortest track, 2 minutes and 38 seconds. I find it a challenge to make short songs. How about you?
I mean, for me, the song kind of decides when it's finished for me.
Mm-hmm.
And usually I don't make very short songs. Usually they're quite a bit longer, also because I come from progressive music, so
yeah,
I'm more used to listening to long songs and epics. But yeah, this one, songs, they just kind of want to get released at a certain stage, and sometimes you just feel it. Yeah, this is just right. It delivers what it has to deliver, and there's nothing more in a sense that has to be said with that. And I think there can be a certain skill to develop the intuition to feel, okay, like this has said what it has to say, not to kind of drag things on or trying to, you know, extract more out of the song that it, you know, than what it needs, but than what it needs to, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. I get what you're saying. So in the sense of you've got a 2.5 minute long song, and you could like, well, I think this should be twice the length, but you're not feeling that it needs that. Like that this is what it has.
Exactly.
And actually it's nice because it comes right in the middle of the album. So it's kind of heavily loaded at the top and then gets heavily loaded at the bottom. And in the middle, we have kind of this breath of fresh air, this shorter track. And then it gets back into more rhythmic stuff. And really, just overall, I feel like every track really stands on its own and they really work together. And just the progression from one track to the next. Even with that, usually the way that I end up recording an album is just whatever song is the first song in the album is the first song I recorded. And whatever song is the last song on the album, that's the last one I recorded. That's how I tend to work. How about for you? Are you recording these in this order, or then are you recording them and then deciding what order do I want to have them in? What works best?
I mean, sometimes I have a loose idea of like, I would want this to be kind of in the middle because it's nice to have a lighter, you know, more relaxed song to space things out in between. But usually it's more afterwards where I kind of think a little bit more about the whole trajectory and the flow, you know, between all the songs.
So then after Heartmind, we get this really nice, beautiful vocals coming in and fairly simplistic lines. I mean, there's not a lot of lyrics. There's just a few lines that are repeated. We are the song of the universe. I forget the rest of the line that's said at the moment. I think it's really nice to add in these melodic vocal elements at this point in the album. It's kind of like, I wasn't expecting that because everything had been instrumental with some spoken bits before, but now we've got this beautiful vocal in.
It's just a song that has, I guess, a certain special memory for me or special meaning that I really wanted to materialize because it wasn't out there. Yeah, and I think it can be nice to take these little moments, you know, a song that sticks with you after a ceremony and like it's in the ether and it wants to be birthed. So I took on that role, and a good friend of mine, Vala, she was so kind to come on and do the vocals. I think it's a very kind of beautiful, almost princessy song.
Yeah.
It has a bit of that Disney-ish vibe to it. But
Well, you know, it'd be really cool. And who knows, this just might happen, that your album comes out, that song gets out there. And just what if somehow your song of the universe makes it back into the ear of the woman who sang at that ayahuasca ceremony?
You know, will.
I mean, these things do tend to happen in sort of these bizarre ways, that the world is not as big as we think it is sometimes. And so there's actually a good chance that it might actually end up back in her ears. And that could be just very interesting if that actually occurs. Yeah. She might reach out to you and like, hey, where'd you hear this? And they're like, oh yeah, that was you. That was me.
She's just going to send me a copyright strike.
I hope not. I hope it's more
credit for the melody and the lyrics. But I honestly don't know who wrote it. I don't think it was the person in the ceremony either. I think it goes back a little further than that. But hopefully it makes its way back to its origin. That would be a beautiful character arc for this piece of music.
Yeah, it definitely would. Definitely would. So we'll go ahead and we can listen to some of the lyrics in this one now. So
we are created by the sound of the universe. We are created by the sound. We are created by the
All right, so now let's get into Shiva's Shuffle. So this one probably has the most distinct rhythmic identity that's different from the other tracks. So when we get into Black Hole of Eternal Bliss, we get into some very different rhythms from one section of the song to the next. But yeah, for this one, Shiva's Shuffle, and I think this is the one with like the really cool bass line. Yeah, so it's got that sort of bouncing bass, that boom, 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 ba-doom, ba-doom, boom, boom, boom. Yeah. So, yeah, tell us about this track and Shiva's Shuffle. And, of course, Shiva, he's the god that dances the universe into being. He dances a lot. Right. He meditates a lot. He's really right. into sex, and cannabis is his go-to, you know, yeah. plus everything else. Because, you know, Shiva, he's into all that stuff. You know, I always told my students in my religious studies classes that Shiva is like the original god of sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think he was a good character to bring in for this track. I don't know, it just felt right. But yeah, it is the most kind of bouncy, shuffly track on the album. It's and it has different features than it's probably even the most simplistic track on the album, and it is the most kind of rhythmically based in a certain sense. And I was playing a lot more with, because sometimes I tend to make complex music, and I guess the feeling behind this one was like, okay, I want to just take it down a bit and get back to the basics and create something a little bit more simplistic, simple melodies, you know, a good groove. And yeah, I think I finished that one in like 1 or 2 days.
And had you worked with this kind of beat before? Because, I mean, it definitely stands out within the album.
I mean, it's a little bit on the previous album, The Cosmic Circus. I was playing on some parts more with shuffle, and to me that's a nice tool for electronic musicians to have that not everybody is aware of, and it's quite simple to do within the software. And because sometimes electronic music can be what's the right word? It's too kind of formalized. It's too 4x4, square by square.
Yeah.
Symmetrical network, which can be great. And like most of the songs on the album have that element, but it can be so nice to switch it up, and it humanizes things a little bit more also to add a little bit of swing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned squares, because what came to mind was like, yeah, it's a little bit more like working with triangles for me anyway. I don't know.
Yeah, it is. No, and symmetrically, it is a little bit more like that.
Yeah.
Because if you would look at the notes, they would be shaped a little bit more triangularly than if you had just, you know, 4x4. Yeah.
Yeah. So where's a good section from this one for us to listen to? What's your favorite part?
Well, there's a nice build-up that comes, and then there's a energetic drop release. It's right after the build-up, because you can have kind of the end of the build-up and into the drop.
Okay. So for people who listen to a lot of electronic music, these ideas of a buildup and a drop are familiar. And probably people listening to this now, they're like, oh, yeah, we understand these song elements. But maybe is there anything that you'd want to tell us about the importance of these sort of elements within electronic music and how they get used? Anything you'd like to philosophize on there?
I mean, a lot of music is about tension and release. Like even
when I'm improvising on the guitar, I know, for example, that if I play this, it has a certain tension to it, and that it wants to go far away. Now I'm
you're still building
getting
tension.
Confused. Yeah. This would be a good example of a tension, and then and here we have the release. That's kind of a more harmonic example of tension and release. But you have this also simply with kind of I would say kind of energetic structuring of a song. So like if you listen to most electronic music or most electronic dance music, you have this part when it goes down a bit, the drums maybe quiet or go away, and you have a little bit more ambience, and then they come back in like doom, 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 doo 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 doo. You're kind of building up the energy, and then it, you know, it drops into, you know, a more energetic section of the track. And it is a very fine art of to do it right, because it's very easy, for example, to make a build up that creates a lot of tension and makes you and increases your level of anticipation really strongly, and then you could have a drop that doesn't really live up to that. So it's a really fine polishing process of kind of making sure that all the energetics of the song align.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, it just makes me think of some video I watched of a DJ who was doing the build up, and then when he got to the drop, he was like inserting like old timey classic music, like things that were completely unexpected. So it didn't satisfy the anticipation in the way that people were expecting, but you know, you get this big you know, then the music would be completely different at that point. That's not what you're going for here, but you know, it's just fun the ways that we can sort of play with this sense of anticipation and expectation, and that so much of music is that interplay between the familiar and then also introducing perhaps unexpected elements to keep it novel. And so that's sort of the fine balance that people are working with. You know, and so sometimes you can play with that in a way that's sort of goofy, but if you're serious about it, then you know, you want it to work, as you say, that you want the buildup to lead to some kind of satisfying sense of, oh yeah, now the bass kicks in and I'm really feeling it, versus like, oh well, that was a letdown.
Right, exactly. And this is approached a lot in, like, by, for example, taking away the bass of a track or the lowest frequencies and then bringing them in when the beat drops. There's many, many different methods and ways to play with this. I use a lot of nature sounds, sometimes like wind. Mm-hmm. When I'm trying to make the energy of the song rise, I use I create my own risers that rise in pitch. A lot of white noise and all these things that are kind of more not melodic elements. They're more, I guess, ambience related elements that play a really big part in the whole flow of the song.
Yeah, and that's definitely a big element of electronic music, where these aspects of tension build up and release, that they're not technically instruments. They're ornamentations within the song itself. So there's more these structural aspects of using sounds that has a rising pitch, but yeah, it's not an instrument that's doing that, versus when you're playing the guitar, it's all in the relationship between the chords or the notes and then the pauses. So it's using those elements, but just using them in a very different and very technical way. That's what allows for electronic music to be electronic, that we can use these aspects of sound that we can't really access through a traditional instrument.
Right.
Yeah, and that seems like a good segue into the black hole of eternal bliss, because there's a lot of that going on in this one.
Yes.
So yeah. This epic track, I mean, 14 minutes, that's a long track. It totally works as a track. I mean, there's never any point in listening to this song where you're like, okay, when are we going to be done with this? You know, because there's always something new coming in the track. So
right.
Where do you want to start talking about this one? Like, how did this begin?
I mean, It began just like I was just playing around with some pads, and in the beginning of the track you hear a bit of ambient intro, and I didn't mention this in my kind of influences with music. I'm a huge fan of ambient music, and that shines through a lot in also what I implement in electronic music. And I was just playing around with some pads, and then I started to add more and more elements, and I started to make drums and bass. And this was where this was at a time where I had kind of relatively recently got my new computer, and I got curious, like how many layers of synthesizers can I layer before this computer starts to have issues? Because like on my older computers, I used to always run into issues. My creativity was limited by the fact that, you know, the processing power of the computer wasn't able to handle what I wanted to do. So I got curious, like, how much can I add? So it had a little bit of this, little game aspect, like, how far can I stretch this? And I took it all the way. I was like, this track really wants to be long, and it wants to have a lot of stuff. And it's interesting because this is one of those tracks where the same part never comes twice. Yeah. It's a constant evolution. And this is what I love most about progressive music, is it has this element of surprise, but it has to work. Like you mentioned with the DJ adding in, like, you know, old timey music, you know, that's an element of surprise done in a humorous way. But if you want to do it in a musical way, it has to work. And that is the test. Yeah, it has a lot of novelty. It's a lot of layer. I think the track is like something like 600 layers.
Wow.
So it's a really big one. It's not only long, it's almost like a new track for each section. But the trick was to make it work, and to make two seemingly radically different sections blend into each other in a seamless way.
Yeah, and the beats even shift and change a lot. There's like certain sections that seem a bit more glitchy and then a little bit more trap, and then it gets back into more of like a 4/4. I don't even know if I'm describing any of that correctly, but that's just, those are the words that come to mind for me. But it definitely shifts so much from one section to the next. Like, so in creating this beast of a song, are you fully working out one section and then progressively moving to the next, or were you just, okay, so you're going one step at a time?
Yeah, because it gets too messy otherwise, because it has so many elements that if you're going to skip over and I'll polish this later, things are going to get lost. And so like, it was a bit like, okay, now I have to work on the next section of a track. And it's just a little bit like, okay, I have to make a new track. Yeah. And that is also why this track was a bit of a pain in the ass to create. Like, it was not all fun. It was like a lot of work and a lot of polishing and fine tuning. And because it's tricky enough to get, for example, the transitions of a single song to work, but to do it continuously in this way was really hard to accomplish. But I'm quite happy with the result. I think it's really like, it's really novel and evolving, but it is cohesive as a unit.
About how long did it take you to work on this? And I know you're probably still putting some final touches on it, but what's been the trajectory for just this track, The Black Hole of Eternal Bliss?
It was about 2 years ago when I started, and I worked on it for a while, and then I needed to take many breaks to because I had worked on it too much, and it just, and this is probably the hardest thing about making electronic music, is that you have to hear the thing so many times.
Yeah.
And it can happen in the middle of the process that you get sick of the thing, but you really want to finish it. So you're like, sometimes you're like, okay, like, have to like ignore my auditory nausea to, you know, to be able to progress with this. But yeah, it took me 2 years, but yeah, it's hard to say because I took really, really long breaks in between, but it, yeah, if I didn't take any breaks, I would say it would have taken maybe 6 or 7 months, you know.
Wow.
Something like that.
That's a lot. That's a lot. So
yeah.
In doing this technical masterpiece, do you feel like you've scratched that itch, or is part of you like, okay, I want to tackle more of that. I want to make another Mount Everest-style song. Or is that like, okay, 600 tracks on this one song, that's enough, I'm not doing that again. What's your feeling on that at this point?
At this point, I'm full. I'm satisfied. But I will probably get the urge again. And maybe I'll approach it in a different way. That's maybe adding more instrumentation, live instrumentation, or something to make the process, you know, a little bit more enjoyable. Because, like, I'll be honest, it was a bit torturous on some levels to work on this, because it's like, it's not always enjoyable to sit in front of the computer for hours upon time, you know, just like hacking away at this stuff. And I want to explore ways to make that a little bit more enjoyable. Maybe a standing up desk, or involving more people, or adding more live instrumentation. Because I really think music should be fun. I mean, not all aspects of it are directly fun. There are kind of work type aspects to making music, but like it shouldn't have to, like, there's this whole romantic idea of like, you need to suffer as an artist.
Yeah.
You need to transmit pain into this whole romanticism of like, you need to suffer for your art. And like, I mean, for sure there is good art that comes out of pain, but I don't think you need to kind of self-inflict pain on yourself in order to fuel your creativity.
Yeah.
You know? Which I know a bunch of people that do that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Please bring me more pain so I'm inspired to create. Please.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's such an aspect of the electronic music that there are so many dials, there are so many effects, there are so many filters. There's just so much you can do. And I tend to be sort of on the minimalist side of that, like, because, you know, as you say, there's a big difference between when you're sitting down and actually playing an instrument, where it's the keyboard or whatever, and you're like, you're making the music, and then there's the shaping and the structuring,
yeah,
of the music, which is something totally, yeah, different than the playing of the music. And that's where there's so much attention that gets paid within electronic music for all of these elements, that it is a very technical process versus that, yeah, sense of freedom where you pick up the guitar and just like, oh, I can play whatever I want. I can, you know, and just let it express and let it be what it is, versus the constant fine tuning and polishing and structuring.
Right. And yeah, in a sense, I envy you for being more on the minimalist side of that, because yeah, I've struggled with that. I'm a helpless perfectionist, which is a blessing and a curse, because sometimes I can make good stuff from that. But it's I'm so prone to obsession. It happens so often that I'm making something, and then I just like, I become completely obsessed by it. I don't sleep in the night because I was up until 6 or 8 in the morning working on something. And I feel like I don't always necessarily have the healthiest relationship, or maybe I just need to allow that obsession to have its its place and to create, but it's like, yeah, I wish sometimes I had the ability to just detach from a creative process and go out and touch the grass, because I barely even go to the bathroom because I become so, you know, sucked into this creative process, and I'm really enjoying it, but like it has an obsessive component to it for me.
Yeah, it could be rather consuming, can it?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and you know, having spoken with other electronic musicians, that I know that that's not unusual for people who really want to produce something that is really stellar, because again, there's so many different ways you can manipulate sounds digitally, you know, on the computer. There's so much you can do. There's so many different things you can try. And a lot of the electronic musicians that I've spoken to talk about, oh yeah, well, you know, I tried tweaking this and then I tried tweaking this. And as you say, you listen to it so many times and then you lose track of like, well, is this really better than it was like 20 iterations ago now at this point? Right. Or is it just something different? And it can just become just so consuming.
Yeah. And there is like an ineffable element to getting it right. Like you just know it at a certain stage, we're like, ah, this is right. And this is why I think, at least not in the near future, that AI will be able to create music to the same degree, even electronic music, as humans, because there is just this a bit unquantifiable element of getting the parameters in a way that just feels right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think humans, like, you need a lot of intuition and judgment to be able to like really listen and be like, no, there's something off here. There's something not completely right. And then, you know, sometimes I've worked on a piece for multiple hours, or like worked on a section of a song for multiple hours. So when I realize, well, this is not really serving the song, and just having to delete hours of progress.
Yeah.
You need a little bit of this kind of ruthless judgment to really get the best result.
Yeah, and even that can be hard, like deleting a section of a song because you get attached to it. Like, but I've worked so hard on this. Sure. Like, shouldn't it be there? But well, no, it's just not working. So it's that fine balance between absolute dedication and then also willingness to just drop something, you know?
Right. Yeah. Your ego can get in the way of just getting really attached to the amount of work you put into something, or needing things to work out in a certain way. And there is a natural humility to this process sometimes, of like, you can't completely dictate. At least not me. I've never been somebody who can sit down and say, well, I'm going to create this type of song, and I do it like this and this and this. Like, I cannot dictate a result. Like, for me, the song has to speak to me and reveal to me what it is that it wants.
Yeah.
In a certain sense.
Yeah, I totally get that. And it's a weird phenomenon. And I find that also in writing, like particular in writing creative works, writing novels, where, you know, I might have an idea of where the plot's going to go or what a character is going to do, but then suddenly, no, this character actually needs to do something totally different. And I also take the same approach with music, that I only might loosely start out with an idea. Well, I want to make a song that kind of sounds like this, but then really just letting, like, oh no, this is turning into like a dub track, and I never intended for it to be a dub track, or, you know, whatever. It's working and it's not my idea, but then letting yourself go with the idea and how it's actually presenting.
Exactly. Yeah. I think like the most exciting music or interesting music I hear is music that can't be placed in a certain genre. And this has been like my goal with music, is to really blur the lines of like, what is a genre? You know, and creating a song that is just completely its own thing. And for me, it's so beautiful. It's like the beauty of invention almost, because you're not relying on these preconceived notions of, well, I'm creating a dubstep track. It needs to be this tempo, needs to have this kind of bass. And, you know, there's a whole formula to it, which is fine if you want to get a specific result. But for me, it's so much more exciting to really have no idea where it's going to snowball. And then it just surprises you. And for me, it's like, that is the most enjoyable part of the music, is when you're like, oh, this sounds so good. And like, this is just, it's new own thing. It's
Yeah, well, I definitely think that comes through on the Black Hole of Eternal Bliss. So at this point, we're going to sample just a few different sections. And just for the listeners, just keep in mind, everything we're listening to here is actually coming from the same song, from the same track. Okay, well, that was obviously very enjoyable to listen to all those tidbits from Black Hole of Eternal Bliss. Now, Helgi, I'm going to be letting you go in a few minutes here, but previously you had released under the name Huiki? Is that?
Huiki.
Huiki. So for us English speakers, how do you spell that? And is this going to be also released under that Huiki, same name?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and how do you spell it? What is it? And where are we going to be able to find this beautiful album, Ecstasy Juice from God?
So, yeah, I thought about changing the name at some point because, like, I was constantly running into this problem of, like, no, what's your artist name? It's Huiki. Having to spell it out for everybody.
Yeah.
But it's H-E-W-K-I-I. And I'll be releasing the album. It's gonna come out on pretty much every single one of the streaming services, on YouTube and Bandcamp. We'll be making a vinyl and a CD.
Cool.
As well. Yeah. I really like. In the past few months, the past year, we've been releasing more of vinyls and CDs, and for me, it's so. That's what's missing a little bit from kind of the thing from everything being online. It's like being able to hold your own piece of work in your hands.
Yeah.
Is it has a certain feeling to it. And so, yeah, it'll be coming out on all those. And HUWKII. You can Google me or on Spotify. You'll see when it comes out.
And does that have a meaning or... Where does that come from? Yeah.
Oh, it's a funny story because when I was a little kid, do you remember Lego Bionicles?
Yeah.
Oh, like I was so obsessed with them as a kid, and they had this movie come out and it had the Icelandic translation. And there was this one character called Hjuki, but the translator, he said it something like Havki. Which I heard always as Helgi. So I was like, oh, this character has the same name as me. Mm. So I naturally assumed that Hjuki was the English translation of my name, you know? So, like at some point in my teens, a friend, you know, he said to me something like, yeah, you should use that name. You should use Hjuki. Yeah. And so I did.
All right. Cool. Yeah. Well, people can look for... Ecstasy Juice from God from Hjuki, Hewkii.
Yes, one more thing. Also, if like we've not spoken as much about the guitar, if people wanna check out some of my guitar stuff, I'm using the artist name Colibri, like the bird. But you may need to write the name of my last album, Colibri Divine Flow, and you'll be able to find some freestyle guitar music.
Yeah, and a lot of that's available on your Facebook page.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and that's just under Helgi Freyr. I didn't pronounce
Helgi Freyr Thomasson.
H E L G I F R E Y R.
Yeah, and you'll see a guy with a guitar.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Helgi. And do you want to play us out with a little guitar here?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll do a little bit.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we've been speaking with the obviously multi-talented Helgi Freyr, talking about his new album, Ecstasy Juice from God. Helgi, thanks so much for your time today and for inviting me to be part of this amazing album that's coming out.
Yeah, and likewise.
It's just been a pleasure speaking with you today and also being a part of this phenomenal music project. So thanks for including me.
Aho, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be on the podcast. I'm a big fan.
All right.